and welcome back to Literally Literary. If this is your first time joining us, be sure to check out our previous episodes. This episode, we will be continuing our discussion on Brother Sleep by Aldo Amparan. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the second half of this collection.
Well, hello, little Larrys.
Great.
Yes.
All the little welcome Larrys. Back. Welcome back. We're back, and we're ready to talk about the second half of this book.
Yeah.
Right on.
And Richie, you want to comment on the mood in the podcast room right now?
Do I have to? Okay, I will.
Yes.
Because you are only listening to the audio, so it's worth mentioning a visual element that you can't appreciate, but you will after I tell you this. So the lights in this room we're recording in are a nice, cool blue. In fact, we're swimming in it. We're swimming in blues, and it's appropriate for the book because Vanessa.
Because Aldo used a lot of the word blue and like blue. I don't know what I'm saying. Blue is like really heavy throughout the collection.
Mm. Yeah. Lots of blues, lots of dark colors, blacks that fit with the mood in these poems. Yeah.
Why blue?
What does blue represent?
This is that meme with like the kids, like, you know, the English teacher, because the curtains were blue. You guys know
it all,
you know,
makes sense. Yeah.
I was kind of alluding to that, but obviously these are intentional with purpose. Yeah. The blues, right?
Especially if it's repeated so often, and he could pick any color, right? But obviously he's doing this on purpose, and it brings that mood to what he's trying to say. I mean, I think even one of the poems is the blue, something blues, right?
Yes, I think it's
Black
the
Palace
one there.
Blues, which is perfect. But yeah, so I mean, he's very intentional with his use of blue in these poems. But I think it's not the same, right? Like in every poem, it's kind of like those contextual use of blue,
yes.
Right? Obviously it can mean blues, or obviously it can just be like the aura of this person that he's describing, or it can be beauty and, and like calm and the sea, right?
And the color blue.
Yeah.
Like blue hair.
Yeah. So it's really cool to see how he's using the same color in different ways to create different moods.
Cool.
So speaking of like something he's been doing throughout the collection, we were kind of talking about other themes that we're seeing in parts 3, 4, and 5 that we saw in the beginning of the collection, like the obvious, like death and violence, shame. What were some other ones, Vanessa?
or I Richie? Think, death, especially, desire,
memory, dreams, identity, family, relationships.
Absolutely. And on top of that, it continues the interrogation of language through these glossary poems. And also just a form. Not even an interrogation of form, but again, breaking of it, making new stuff. Again, we talked about, was it Concave as an example, that poem?
Yeah.
That's really interesting that I've never seen elsewhere. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting to come across.
It is very cool.
And
visually, but also like trying to figure out how it should be read and reading it different ways and finding different meanings with each read.
The way you
read it, which is the beauty of poetry, right? And like it having multiple meanings and multiple interpretations.
Some great art when you can look at it multiple ways, right? Or have different readings and come out with different readings of it, you know, interpretations of it.
Yeah. Were there any others? Well, I know Concave stood out to you a lot, Richie. Was there one that stood out to you, Vanessa, in the second part?
Yeah.
One to start with. I mean, I'm sure there were more than one.
Yeah.
Well, I liked Misadventure, which is after Concave. So if you want to talk about Concave first.
Was there anything you wanted to say about Concave, Richie? Paige's Concave Mom. Blue Insomnia.
It's 50. 50? 50, yeah. Because I also know that you liked Misadventure a lot too, right? So, I mean, again, it's just another entry into the glossary for what you left unsaid. And again, you have the multiple definitions here. Kind of this, what is concave? And then in the middle of that, this cavity, right? Mm-hmm. You have this separate piece. Again, it's broken up. How do you read it? Do you read the inside part first? Are you trying to read the definition part first? It's broken up. So do you maybe read it through the lines? A lot of different ways to read it. How did you guys read this one? That just instinctually, first time reading it. What'd you decide to go with?
I read it as its own thing. I read the definitions first, and then I went back and kind of read.
I read the middle part first.
I did that too. I did outside in.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it that way. I was fighting myself. I want to read it that way, but I was like, no, I have to read it from right here. I fought myself.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's a cool experiment too, to be like instinctively, how are you wanting to read this? Mm. How should it be read? What were his intentions with creating this visual?
And that's something poetry that you've previously touched on, right? When you talk about poetry with your students, right? You know, what's the significance of how an author, because it's all obviously chosen for a purpose. So certain breaks, certain elements, you know, how does it affect our reading and our perspective on it? And I know you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, that was basically it.
You said everything I was going to say.
No. That's always a question. I always try to remind students, even when we're doing fiction, but especially poetry, right? It's like all of these were choices. Where they break the lines, the words that they're choosing, especially with poetry, the packed words that can have multiple meanings, loaded words. And things like this, you know, that are visually different from what we're used to and don't follow conventional rules of up, down, left, right kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's an actual hole in this piece, right?
Yeah.
And something in the center that our eyes are gravitating towards. And so it's what does that do for the piece? You know, if we read this first and then read the outside, or if we do this and then read that. So I always like to ask students those kinds of questions, what do those breaks contribute to the reading or your understanding of the poem?
That's a pretty good direction.
And there's no right or wrong, and I can't be no, that's actually not what the poet meant, because
I've walked by her classrooms before. It's it's that one jazz movie with... instead of throwing symbols, she's throwing the book.
Wait, are you talking about?
Yes, I'm talking about that one.
You're dumb. I don't.
How do you even know which one I'm talking about?
Because it's the only one I'm alluding to.
But how do you know I know?
Spider-Man?
No, I was way off.
Okay, Spooperman.
It's...
I just couldn't remember the name. Clash, no.
No, it's something with the...
Oh, Whiplash?
Whiplash.
Yeah, it was with the W.
With Miles Teller.
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's the main guy.
What do you mean?
Oh.
He's hello.
No way.
Hello, good morning.
Just kidding. Sorry, I only see Joe John at Jameson, okay?
No, so anyway, I do not do that.
She doesn't. She doesn't. She's great. She's awesome.
I don't throw books.
Actually, I was in her class, and I can... I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Yeah, I can still see, the...
the scars.
The trauma.
No, but that's a great question. And also, again, I do want to maybe bring it back to the fact that some people listening here are educators, and, you know, definitely, if you're not doing so, definitely encourage your students to think about, approach their readings these ways as well. It's a good question to approach anything, right? Like you said, not just poetry, but again, poetry is crafted in particular ways, but you can definitely be experimental in fiction, of course, as well, and other types of writing.
But I think precisely because poetry is so crafty, that's why we have that urge to be like, this is all perfect how it is here, and this is how you're supposed to read it, and this is what they're doing, and these are the rules for this poem, right? But I think that limits readers. You know, it's like, yeah, there's all this cool crafty stuff going on, like in Aldo's book. I mean, every poem has something. And that's so cool to look at. But I don't think we should limit ourselves to just like the form or structure, right? Like, see the cool things that he's doing with the color blue and the cool things that he's doing with these definitions and all of these collective glossary poems, for example.
Exactly. And again, just reading the whole thing is a work, too. We're talking about the common themes that come out. I know you really loved the next piece on that.
I really did.
Where should I begin? At the end.
Begin, no, I'm just kidding.
I don't know. I read this one and I was like, yes. Yes to everything in this. So it's called Misadventure. And it was kind of interesting to see the relationship that the speaker has with their father. And kind of the way that's seen, or like, people are, like, assuming things about him, I guess, because of, like, the relationship that he has with his father. But it might not necessarily be the case, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, the relationship with the father, or lack thereof, right?
Right.
Being fatherless, what that means, what he's blamed for. Because of that, because of the choice his father made by not being around.
Yeah.
And then other fathers in the equation too. And their, you know, secrets. So there's a lot here.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that he's that he's tackling. Just about parents and... Again, I think, like, assumptions or misconceptions about who he is, like, his identity.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, acceptance or, like, blaming it on not having a father. Like, he didn't have the father role, and so that's why he's gay. Or, you know, whatever ignorant thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's blaming. He's being blamed for. Right.
Yeah.
Or that's how I took it. I don't know. That's how I read it.
Yeah.
Sure.
But it's also talking about like space, like the so I feel like that's really important in this poem too, because it's like these relationships, but it's also like the physical places that he's like his, where he lives, his country, and I don't know, like I, like, what do you guys think the setting means in this poem? Let's start there. Because he starts with the Rio Bravo, and he alludes to the moon, which he does in a lot of these poems, and then by the end of the poem, it's houses, the smell of gunpowder. So we see allusion to like violence, a loved country for safety. So like, how does that connect to like being fatherless and being gay and those kinds of things?
Those are great questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Move on.
Well, no. I mean, I was just thinking more like, it's interesting how, one, it's interesting to be called the real Bravo, right? That says a lot about perspective. Again, what side of the river are you talking about? Because we call it different names depending on what side you're looking at it.
Yeah.
But it starts with being born, with birth, and ends with death. And I really love the last line of this piece. I always love a good last line that just is like kind of putting the foot down, right? And again, it ends with death there.
Yeah.
For safety. Just kind of, I mean, talking about setting, like, just like insecurity in terms of like place, lack of safety or I'm not saying this the right way. Yeah, not insecurity. That's kind of a messed up way to say it. But like, I know death is fat, tall and white as the edge of this page. Interesting isolation then in that piece. Maybe isolated could be a way of thinking about.
Yeah. I also kind of took the setting as like how you were saying, like on one side of the river, it's the Rio Bravo. I feel like it's kind of also showing like the migration from one side to the other because of violence is what I understood.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's other poems, right, that talk about that, like the violence of of homosexual men and all the things they have to endure in Chihuahua, of course, everywhere, but like in these particular poems, and then how the speaker's experience with that has been different, being en el otro lado, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like the duality of that, or like the contrast that we see with both countries. And why is it titled Misadventure? It's a great title, by the way.
Yeah.
Do we have any thoughts?
I feel like I do, but I don't want to assume anything. And I'd love to ask him that, though.
Yeah. I don't think it's an assumption. I mean, or we can, it's okay to make assumptions. That's the whole point, right? Reading poetry and interpreting it our own way. But if you don't want to, we don't have to. We can ask him.
It's just like life. I don't know. Like life is a misadventure. I don't know. Does that even make sense?
Well, I think you encapsulate the entire length of poem, you know. Or the spirit of the poem, of course, right?
I really liked Sinner on 57. I just really enjoy controversial poetry. And I feel like this poem is pretty controversial.
Better than controversial comedy, right?
I like controversial comedy, too.
That's controversial.
And you want to cancel me.
And I'm the one being canceled.
Well, do you really want to talk about that again?
I'm going to edit this out, by the way. I'm editing that part out.
Okay. On 57. So I like it just because, you know, it's like all these things that the speaker has alluded to kind of throughout a few of the poems in the beginning of the collection. Here, they're really, you know, like outright stating, you know, how problematic religion can be for, you know, people who are different or, how do I say this? Like, non-inclusive, So it's kind of nice because we're seeing like both sides, and it starts with like, forgive me, brother. And so we know that the brother is like this huge figure in this collection, right? Like it's all mostly about him. Uh-huh. But it also has that dual meaning here. And he's talking about sinning, and he's talking about, you know, not really understanding, like having specific feelings about certain things, like gay priest jokes, and then like what he's trying to do at school before he's come out, you know, playing the part, right? Which may have been forced on him by family, but also by religion, right? Which is why I think it's called Sinner. But by the end of the poem, there's like that progression where there's more of that violence, you know.
Yeah. Man, that image.
And shame. I know.
Yeah. Bloody hands and the praise of God. Like, my only reaction to this was to react violently here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of that, like, homophobic, ironically homophobic behavior. And and yeah, that last image, you know, I liked the other boys cheering behind us, their masculine claps convinced of the man I was, my red hands unfolded and ready to praise God. Right. So all coming back to, the religion, and, you know, the same hands that did this violent act, you know, are hypocritically,
offering
praise to a God that does not accept certain people. I don't know how else to say it.
Right.
But yeah, I really liked this poem a lot. The imagery is great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It just reminds me also of, like, since it's Banned Books Week, and all the kinds of like really hard topics that are talked about in books like these, and how a lot of, you know, people who are coming of age or who have never been exposed to this kind of poetry, who might be going through similar experience, might not get to read these books, right? Because they're being taken away from them or removed from libraries. And I know this is Adlo's first collection, but, you know, like, I see him going places and having his books in libraries and schools. And so it would be a shame to not have people of all ages, especially here on the border, read these poems and get to experience them, you know. But anyway, I just thought of that because of this particular one. There's a lot of them, but this particular poem that could be seen as too controversial. Anything that talks about religion, it's near. You have to tread lightly. Do you all have any other poems in part three, or should we move on to parts 4 and 5?
I liked a lot of the lines in Blue Insomnia. I like the third stanza, I guess, or the third section. Where do I start? Okay. There's a shape of a coin under the mattress. I feel it against my vertebrae. I lift the bedding, find air, dry flowers, a black beetle crawling, a spring popping fabric, a rusted razor I used to cut myself in high school with. So I really liked that line, or that section. And then at the bottom of this page, just this, like, the description of the relationship with the grandfather. And then that second section, I guess. I knocked and knocked until mother found me half asleep on the floor with reddened knuckles. I don't know. I just really like the way that imagery just creates, like, that feeling of loneliness and, like, that feeling of desire.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, like, coins and like, it's not so much like the tactile as it is like the taste senses.
Yeah.
With that, which it's really, really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a heavy piece. Captures pretty well, kind of like his episodic nature of depression, of like staying in, wanting, you know, and continuing on through that. Even the ending, the last couple of sections there, I really loved some of these lines, right? I want to be torn open with much of the world. And then just that too, because I want and I want, because the sky lacks moon and the rain lacks song, and hunger hangs a hyacinth at my mouth, my stomach. That ends this section, right? This is one of the ones where you felt like it could have been read both ways. The citizens one.
The glossary for what you left unsaid to this thing. Especially the first one. I don't think so much with the second and the third definitions.
Right.
But for sure the first one.
Yeah, there's a lot in section four on border issues and immigration and so it's a very personal book, but I feel like it has so much like political commentary too. Which I really enjoyed. You know, there's a lot of, they're not footnotes, but notes at the end of the collection about specific deaths that he was alluding to and different things like that. So, or even in between or at the beginning of some of these poems, he talks about that. So, like, for example, in Scrapbook for My Undoing, which is one of those other like really visual, there's a lot of white space, a lot of playing with breaks and things. And then there's, I think on page 70, I think that was taken from like a newspaper news story excerpt or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. From 2008 to 2012, Ciudad Juarez was deemed the most dangerous place on earth. In its worst year, 3,700 murders were reported, most of them attributed to drug cartels. So that's kind of an interesting practice, I guess, too, or which could be, I guess, kind of like found poetry, or because he does that with pieces from news articles, he does that with Juan Gabriel song lyrics. He does that with, and I was just looking at these before I came, so that's why off the top of my head. But, you know, variations of Sharon Olds, or slightly modified lines by Sharon Olds, who's another really famous poet. Which I think is cool, like, borrowing from other artists, news articles, kind of reminds me a little bit of 30 Talks Weird Love. Alessandra kind of did that a little bit with some of the femicide posters and what those said, and she put those in the stories and in the poetry. I don't know. I like found poetry. I try to do found poetry stuff with my students. And they enjoy it because then they don't feel so much pressure to make up a whole poem by themselves. They're like, oh, this line sounds really cool and poetic. I'm going to steal that, you know, quote unquote, steal it and then add to it or whatever.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. In Los Olvidados, that's the one that where he has some Juan Gabriel lyrics.
Yeah.
Throughout. Any other ones from section 4 we can talk about, or section 5?
I really liked Scrapbook for my undoing. Especially pages 70 and 71. Mm-hmm. So this italicized stanza, I really liked. It just feels like it's like picking up pace as I was reading it, because it starts off with like one because, and then it's like because kind of. So I thought that was really cool, the way that it like played with the rhythm that you read it. And then on 71, I'm just going to read it. My father says to say he died in a brawl. No, he died defending his woman. No, my father says to say he died from immolation, ammunition, a lost bullet, a strange illness of the blood in his lungs, inside his throat. That strange sickness in his skin. Tell them, my father says, tell them he didn't die un maricón.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. I like those lines too. This whole poem is just like, what form is it trying to, you know, is it trying to stick to a form? It doesn't seem like it's kind of like all over the place, but
yeah, like that, a scrapbook.
Yeah, that last part is was very like, oof, you know, kind of again bringing back like the shame of what will people say, you know, what kind of shame is it going to bring to our family if this gets out? And then the following poem is The Day I Came Out. Uh-huh. Which is like perfect.
Well, and I guess in that next one, The Day I Came Out, this one really, I think, focuses on like that desire to feel loved, I felt like. To display this ever burgeoning affection, not affliction, not affectation nor consequence, I kissed the man's forehead and left him there, nameless, left with no. And just like the way that the speaker seems to be like chasing this feeling. And that's kind of it, like just that feeling of love.
Yeah, and the way it's on the, presented on the page too, kind of I think invokes pretty great that feeling of chase, right? Because you're having to probably read it different visually. There's a couple other poems like that too, where the indentation's different, right? And you follow along, and again, it's same use of like enjambment, lines running into each other, but it's kind of forcing you to kind of chop it up and follow it. What's coming next? What's coming next? Very much in that theme. The way you said it.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's all I had to say for section 4.
And then we have 2 sections left, right? 5, and then there's the and section, which, great. I'm almost going to have an and section now.
I know.
Including in mine.
All of section these poems five, in section 5 are the primers, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Diagnosis, desert, dream, sleep, shore, silt. Primer for a view of the scene. Yeah, what did we think of these?
That's the answer right there. Answer it.
I liked the way that it plays with setting, not plays with setting, but these poems kind of all go together as being part of that collection. But it's kind of like, I felt like the speaker's journey and like migrating or like immigrating.
But it's also like about more focusing on the brother's death and aftermath, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole image of the sea is because he says my brother never saw the sea. And so that seems to be the image for these five poems or however many it is. And it's all like surrounding water and... Although some of these, like Ciudad Juarez and El Paso and Matamoros. So I definitely agree with you on that, Vanessa. I just, yeah, it for me, that image is kind of stuck in my mind as maybe like the after, not maybe not even the afterlife, but like... It's his brother's, like, final resting place, right? Where they took his ashes.
Yeah.
To the sea.
Yeah, what an interesting use of that, this whole section. A primer view.
And the timeline's kind of all over the place,
jumps,
too, right?
Jumps around.
2003, 2004, then 11, then 15, then 2003 again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. I really like that section. I thought it was, and it's cliche, but I thought it was, like, very calming. Like, a calm section. Maybe because of the visual of the sea, but like there wasn't a lot of talk of like the violence anymore. It was more just like him reflecting and trying to accept.
Yeah, I was gonna say acceptance is kind of negotiation of acceptance, right?
Yeah, like what does that mean for him? How does he move on? And a lot of the memory again keeps coming back, these memories. But it was like a departure from the rest of the poems, or at least the tone changed a little bit. Do you guys have any thoughts on the last poem? Ampersand section?
I really liked this one, too. The imagery in this one, it's kind of my fave. on page 90, that first stanza, I really liked. Tonight, your face vanished from my mind's unending mirror. A blue sadness replaced it. A sound, not your voice... Not your laughter, but the echo of a gunshot. I strike my dresser's mirror, break off a shard the size of your head. So the way I understood it, my mind's unending mirror, I think, is memory. Like, so I really liked that being, like, the mirror being memory.
Yeah.
And, like, the reflection that you're seeing. Of your life, I guess.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I dig that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
What's that? Just rereading the end of that poem. Yeah, what a way to end, too. It's the image of two lovers, which is to say two men or two women burrowing into each other's breath. Any final thoughts on the collection?
What do you rate it, Rena?
Just kidding.
Every time.
I knew I was going to get you. No, I really loved this collection. I really did.
If you haven't picked up a copy, go get one.
It is out now.
There's signed copies at Literarity.
Literarity in El Paso.
It'd be cool to do a live podcast there.
That would be cool.
Literary and Literarity.
Literary at Literarity.
Literarity. Such a rarity.
Yes. Just
kidding. Such a rarity to have Literary at Literarity.
It's such an experience, you know. It's kind of hard to talk about themes because they're all present throughout, you know, and just kind of like interrogate, like just kind of analyzing each line. There's just some really well-crafted line work that, you know, isn't to me, it doesn't translate easy talking about here. But I think we have some pretty great questions to ask him if we can invite him and ask him to be on the show. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, man, he's very excited to come.
Is he? Okay, so we'll plan that out.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Literally Literary, recorded at Power at the Pass and brought to you by Border Census. This episode, we continued our discussion on Brother Sleep. If you haven't read it, we hope we inspire you to pick up a copy. Join us on our next episode and follow us on Instagram at literallyliterary.ep and on Twitter at literallylitep.